Hello, my name is Ingrid Clayton. I'm a clinical psychologist, trauma therapist, and complex trauma survivor. I help people understand the survival patterns that shaped them and how to reclaim their voice. I'm going to share 5 key insights from my new book, Fawning: Why the Need to Please Makes Us Lose Ourselves and How to Find Our Way Back. Insight number 1, beyond fight or flight, the trauma response you might be living. Sometimes we have trauma in our lives but don't recognize it as such, especially when it comes to complex trauma. Unlike the more commonly understood forms of trauma like a car crash or a natural disaster, complex trauma is prolonged and ongoing. It doesn't come from a single clear event, but rather from persistent threats to our safety and sense of self or what's possible in our vital relationships. It's often rooted in childhood or relational experiences like growing up with an alcoholic parent, enduring emotional neglect, facing poverty or racism. These are not one-time shocks, but slow drip injuries to the nervous system and the spirit. In these situations, the typical trauma responses we think of, fight, flight, or freeze, often aren't options. You can't fight your parent or flee from your family at age 6, and freezing only goes so far. That's when the nervous system may turn to fawning. Fawning means trying to stay safe by becoming more appealing to the person who makes you feel unsafe. You try to appease, to please, to avoid conflict at all costs. When you smile and laugh off an aggressive advance you don't want, that is fawning. When you stay silent about your values in a toxic workplace to avoid losing your job, that's fawning. When you rationalize a parent's abusive behavior to preserve the relationship, that's fawning too. For me, growing up with a narcissistic stepfather, I learned to fawn early and often, but I didn't have the language for it until I became a trauma therapist and discovered the term fawning, coined by psychotherapist Pete Walker. Suddenly, everything I'd struggled with for decades made sense. Despite being sober since I was 21, reading every self-help book I could find, sitting on various therapist couches, and getting 3 degrees in psychology myself, I was stuck in a chronic fawn response. My dysfunctional relationships, my inability to set boundaries, my silenced voice, all of it traced back to this survival strategy. Naming it was the beginning of reclaiming myself. Insight number 2, people-pleasing is a survival strategy, not a personality flaw. If you've ever been called a people-pleaser or codependent, this insight is for you. One of the goals of fawning is to take the blame and shame out of those labels and to help people understand why they may have adopted these behaviors in the first place. People-pleasing and codependency are what I think of as different flavors of fawning or symptoms of a chronic fawn response. These patterns often begin in childhood. They served a purpose. They helped you secure the love, safety, or connection you were dependent on. In that context, they were brilliant, genius adaptive protectors. The body did what it needed to survive, and it reflexively responded in a nanosecond, without your conscious consent. The challenge is we often carry these same responses into adulthood, even when they no longer serve us. And because they're so deeply wired into our development, we often don't see where we end and fawning begins. We may think we're just being nice or helpful, not realizing what we're really doing is sacrificing our own authenticity. People-pleasing often gets painted as a manipulative or submissive trait, but really, it's about safety. If you learned that keeping others happy was the only way to avoid danger or abandonment, of course you kept doing it. The problem is when you're always attuned to what others want or need, you lose touch with yourself. You abandon you. And that leads us to insight number 3. Fawning requires self-abandonment. At the core of fawning is something many of us carry unknowingly, self-abandonment. To survive your childhood, the various hierarchies of your life, you had to become who you needed to be, not who you truly are. That meant detaching from your inner world, your instincts, your intuition, your insights, even your personality. You learned to shapeshift, to edit yourself, to silence what was real in order to stay safe. The work of unfawning is the work of coming home to yourself. It means learning to go inward and listen to your own voice, your needs, preferences, your truth, and starting to believe that it matters. It means checking in with you first before constantly attuning to the moods, wants, or expectations of everyone else. But let's be real, this isn't easy. It doesn't happen overnight. But the gift of unfawning is this: finally starting to live a life that feels like yours. I've seen this unfold again and again. I've had clients change careers entirely as they reconnect with their inner voice. I've seen people leave abusive relationships, not out of anger, but clarity. They begin to see themselves, really see themselves for the first time. And they begin to seek alignment with who they truly are in their friendships, career goals, even hobbies. That's the heart of this work. Unfawning isn't about being selfish. It's about being real. Insight number 4. Unfawning doesn't mean you'll never fawn again. Here's something that often surprises people. The work of unfawning doesn't mean never fawning. Fawning was once your best survival tool. It may still feel like the safest option in some situations. So the goal isn't total elimination. It's creating more capacity, flexibility, and conscious choice. It's when we don't default to fawn every single time. There may be moments when the body might still choose to fawn because that's what feels safest in that moment, and that's okay. What's different is that we're not trapped in the response anymore. We can better assess and perhaps even decide, is fawning the only way through right now? This work invites us to step out of all or nothing mindsets. We're not aiming to go from broken to healed, from unsafe to always safe. That's not realistic. Unfawning is about growing our capacity, stretching into new emotional and relational territory, learning to hold discomfort, risk vulnerability, and explore new ways of being. And yes, it will feel scary. The nervous system will likely still equate discomfort with danger. But part of this work is learning to distinguish between the two. We're forging a new path, one that may not have been modeled or ever felt possible. But with each step, each boundary set, each moment of truth spoken, we strengthen the muscles of self-trust. Insight number 5, it's not your fault. One of the most important things I want you to hear is this: it's not your fault. We live in a world that often requires fawning. From rigid hierarchical work environments to patriarchal systems and racial inequality, many of us learned early on that being agreeable, accommodating, and non-threatening is what keeps us safe. In systems that don't recognize or value our full humanity, fawning isn't weakness, it's wisdom, it's adaptation. But when we understand that, we can start to see our behaviors with more compassion. We can stop blaming ourselves for doing what we had to do. We can recognize the double binds we're often placed in, where there was no good option or no clear way out. And now, our work is to grow beyond rigid coping, to move out of our childhood patterns and into the rest of our lives, not by erasing what's protected us, but by honoring it and then slowly moving out from there into more internal safety. This isn't a linear path. There's no final destination. This is a lifelong journey of returning to yourself again and again. I hope you'll join me in this endeavor. You deserve a life beyond survival mode, where you belong truly and lovingly to yourself. Thank you for listening.